Welcome to the Danny Palmer Show. Does it sound cool if I say it like that? You should see me in a crown when I wear the something down. Billie Eilish. Dude, I feel like Billie Eilish has, like, I mean, obviously a number of good songs. I actually even kind of like that ballad from Barbie, but, like, I don't know, man. 80% of her stuff is, like, very downbeat, very ballad-oriented. I mean, she's beautiful. She's cool. I love her style. I love that See You in a Crown song. I love Bellyache, but, like, I don't know, man. I have a hard time fucking with the ballads, you know? I think I like Olivia Rodrigo's ballads more than Amy Winehouse's ballads, Danny, more than Billy. Anyway, who cares? Who cares? Thank you for listening to my podcast. My name is Danny Palmer. I feel like I say the same thing every time I start the pod. I'm not going to, you know, this time. Let's innovate. Let's grow. Let's not say the vainly titled Danny Palmer Show. That's insane. I already said it less than 1 minute in, even though I said I wasn't going to. Wow. We are off to the fucking John, dude. Yeah. So, dude, this past week, I went down to a weekend. My good friend, Giulio Gallerati, so kind to me, let me open for him at the Funny Bone. On Friday night, we were in Syracuse, and then on Saturday night, we were in Albany, New York, and it was insane, dude. Like, Giulio murdered both shows, obviously. The Syracuse Funny Bone has, like, they said, I think it was, like, over 300 people. I don't know the exact number. Over 300 people. I could even see the back of the room, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, when we got there, we got there, like, an hour beforehand. I would say the room is probably, like, 30% full, you know? And then I looked out like a half hour later or something, and it was just jam fucking packed. I couldn't even see the back of the room. I was like, oh my God, why have I chosen to try to pursue stand-up comedy? This is insane. I'm just going to slide out the back door, just rent a car by myself, go home with no music on the whole way back, just in silence, just ignoring my phone, just quitting permanently. That's what it made me feel like doing. But no, I didn't. I sold it through. It was fun. Then on Saturday night, went to the Albany Funny Bone. That room is super cool. I don't know if you're a hardcore comedy fan. I guess if you're listening to my podcast, you might be to some extent. But that room is like shaped like a bowl, kind of like an amphitheater a little bit, where it kind of goes up. And it just looks really nice. The people that work there are awesome and friendly and accommodating and bring you whatever you need. And it was beyond. I just remember standing there during my set to host the show, just feeling confident and like looking around and being like, oh my God, I'm in control of this room. I'm in control of this room. It's a fucking sick feeling. So that was great. Thank you, Giulio. Did you guys know that there is a 350 year storm on Jupiter? I know that some people know this, but I feel like not all people know this. It's been going on for 350 years. Years. Dude, that is beyond comprehension. I mean, I feel like before the Earth even formed, there were probably massive storms all across the universe that have also been going on for much longer periods of time before the Earth was even formed. Dude, like, what the fuck is going on with space? Space, what the fuck, dude? Also, you know, I'd never been to Syracuse, New York, back to the Syracuse show. And I just, as I'm standing there, I'm thinking, how am I going to convince 300 people to like my jokes when I've never met any of them? I wrote that down in my phone. I forgot to say that. Also, by the way, sorry, I'm jumping around a little bit here, but this Friday, Black Cat LES is going to be a great show. I host it every Friday. It's at Black Cat Comedy on Instagram. This week's weekend's lineup is great. People are already getting tickets before we get close to the date, which is a great sign. It's going to be so much fun. Got Harrison Greenbaum, Molly Brenner, Alex Pavone, Elon Altman, Kate Willett, Darren Passarello, Roberto Garcia. It's just a stellar lineup. And if you want to go, you can go to at Black Hat Comedy to get tickets. Yeah, so that's fucking, there you go. There's my little promo, little plug sitch. You can follow me on Instagram if you're like super hot and you're like, want to like hang out or whatever and stuff, dude. You know what I mean? Like stuff like that, like at Danny Palmer NYC. Okay. I've been saying these things now. Just technically this does count as content. Oh yeah. I was also thinking, I was texting my friend, Zach McGovern, over the weekend, just like kind of like having that moment of being terrified because there's so many people in the comedy room. And I'm like, I have a job. Like, I think I'm just going to go back to do just HR. I don't need this, dude. This is too stressful. You know, I can just like, you know, work out of my apartment 3 days a week. And then I don't need to have 300 people staring at me Why did I bring this upon myself? Oh, that's fun. Okay. Oh, also got some feedback from my friend Betty. She said, I caught your pod from last week when you talked about your mom mentioning a plane crash when you mentioned Mexico City. I'm a squee embarrassed. Squee? I think the word is smidge, Betty. Squee? Who says squee? Are you from England, dude? I'm a squee embarrassed. I knew exactly the show she was talking about, LOL. In her defense, that show runs all the time on Smithsonian. How does that defend my mom watching a plane crash show because it's on Smithsonian? Oh, well, if you're watching, you know, shows about terrible tragedies, as long as they're on a respectable network like Smithsonian, I mean, they have museums, dude. So you can just spend your evening hours reliving human tragedy. But as long as it's on like a respectable channel. So it's unavoidable if you watch documentaries. Is Smithsonian the only channel that airs documentaries? I mean, thank you for the feedback, but I'm rebutting it point by point, apparently. She continues, and it's not the disaster that is entertaining, but how they break it down into the science of all the very specific circumstances coming together that cause the outcome can be fascinating. And by fascinating, you mean taking pleasure in other people's demise. Oh, boy. I don't know. I mean, it is kind of weird, right? Like all these like murder documentaries. I think some people have like pushed back on. They're like, oh, our sister got murdered, or you know, brother got murdered, or whoever. And glad this is a form of entertainment for podcast listeners on the way to work, drinking their Starbucks, thinking about NPR tote bags. What about the like, you know, just the pain and the loss? Is that that kind of takes away from the fun, huh? Or does that actually enhance the fun, you bastards? All right, that's the end of that comment. Do you ever have like a slight disagreement with a friend? I had a slight disagreement with a friend today. I'm not going to go into the details. It wouldn't be fair. It would just be counterproductive and it's dumb. And plus, this is a podcast. But, you know, it's like, oh, well, I got a little mad, right? And then I thought, well, that person had done something that slighted me. And then we talked on the phone. And then I'm like, and then they said, oh, well, here's what you did that wasn't fair to me. And I was like, oh, that's fair. And I'm like, yeah, he's like, just sleep on it. And then we're like, we'll talk. We'll figure it out. Like, I know that stuff happens in life. And people get over it and move on, but it's just like, it's very frustrating in the moment. But then also, I think when things like that happen, what's helpful to me, and it's helping to me just to say this out loud. I mean, this podcast is basically like a form of self-therapy for me. I've realized that over time. Like, even if it doesn't take off and become a revenue-generating podcast or have thousands of listeners each week, it's at the very least therapeutic to speak, you know? But I guess that's selfish on my part, just to like expect people, listeners, to listen to my little therapeutic thing, but I do try to make it entertaining. I have a lot of like stories and I collect facts and like, you know, 350 year storms on Jupiter, et cetera, et cetera. Anyways, what was the fucking point of this, Danny? Oh, just to like acknowledge that, like, you know, part of the course of friendships, not every friendship is going to be like smooth sailing 100% of the time. There are going to be things that come up. And also, you know, when those things do come up, it's a good chance to, I'm telling myself this, to reflect on, okay, you know, you just think I have a valid point. Well, I have a valid point, then that needs to be expressed, and that other person will realize that I have the valid point, and they don't have a valid point. But then, when you actually have a conversation, and you're like, "Oh, well, here's their valid point," you're like, "Oh, okay." But it's actually, I think it's more beneficial. It's like bombing in stand-up. You know, like you learn more from a bomb sometimes than you do when you like smash. And if everything's going smooth sailing in your friendship, you're like, "Hey, man, that was fun," and you know, you're texting each other little jokes. I mean, that's fun, but I wouldn't say that you're really growing during that time. You know. But if there's some sort of, you know, minor conflict that arises, you can kind of step back from that afterwards and be like, okay, maybe I got a little bit too mad a little too soon. Maybe I didn't give them a chance to express what they were saying. You know, maybe I turned the small problem into a bigger one. And then how can I avoid doing that in the future? Like those insights and feedback and reflection, that can impact how you address future potential conflicts or potential minor disagreements with your friends. And so in that respect, as long as the friendship is maintained, that little kerfuffle can be an avenue to growth. And I think it's helpful and productive to look at it that way instead of being like, I was mad for a minute there, you know? So that's fun. If I hadn't talked that into a microphone, I probably wouldn't have, you know, internalized that as well as I'm hopefully doing now. So, also I do meth on the weekends, so maybe that's another thing I should work on. Just kidding. I do have a joke about doing meth once, and I said it in Albany this past weekend. I was like, you guys ever do meth? And everybody's like, they looked shocked. I'm like, come on, dude. You're telling me in this room, no one's done meth, not even one guy. And I think somebody said something. One guy did shout out something. And I just couldn't understand what he was saying. I'm like, is it true that in a room full of 300 people in Albany, New York, that none of them have done meth? But I guess that's me imposing my own interpretation of their response rather than the actual truth in the room. All right, this is getting pretty academic and pedantic. Come on, Danny, here we go. Academic? I don't know if that was academic. I don't know. Just talking pretty fast now. Should probably slow down my tone. You may have heard this recently. The governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, she ordered the National Guard to come to the subways, and I think also like the state police or something like that, to help because there were some violent crime incidents. And it's just like it's just kind of a complex Rorschach test kind of thing, right? Because by some respects, the subway is safer than in the past, and then in other few measures, oh well, there's a little spike here. So it's just like, you know, it's just like it's a good microcosm for all of life. You're like, oh, well, this thing is this way, and then thus we'll respond to it, and that'll fix the problem. Then everybody doesn't see the problem the same way, and then everybody doesn't view the response in the same way. So it's like this kaleidoscope of options and interpretations for both the problem and the response, which is a little crazy. Like people were protesting the National Guard going into the subway. And I'm like, dude, you fucking bring them all, dude. I don't want somebody, like the governor said, she did, you know, if somebody's going to a doctor's appointment on the subway, they have a right to not be sitting next to a someone with a lethal weapon. I'm like, yeah, I agree. You know, this isn't like a hunting field in Alabama. Like this is a really crowded place with tight quarters and there's really no way to escape. So like, let's have some police presence. Like, in the subway. I mean, good if they're doing good things, not doing bad things. Okay. Oh God. You're getting in over your head here, hon. You're getting in over your head. You're right, baby. But this is a stat from that article about the increased police presence in the subway. In mid 2022, there was about one violent crime for every 1 million rides in the subway. Excuse me, according to a New York Times analysis, making the chances of falling victim to such a crime remote. Since then, those chances have become even more remote as the overall crime rate in the transit system has fallen and ridership has increased. So it's like, all right, is this really the right time to be bringing in the National Guard? But I don't know, I think all times are the right time to be bringing in the National Guard. I feel like the National Guard are like very well-respected people, you know? They're always just coming in and helping out with like tragedies and like help people get like food supplies after a hurricane and stuff like that. And like, I saw them out in the subway. They're just like, they set up tables and they're checking bags. Dude, check bags, man. I don't want somebody with a gun in the subway, dude. I want everybody to have guns. You want a gun, you can have a gun. But does it need to be brought in the subway? Uh-oh. Hun, are you really getting into gun control in the subway? This is way out of your wheelhouse. You're right, baby. It might be time to end this episode. And rather than, I did have a set recently where I was talking about something about like politics. Somebody brought up politics in the audience and I know what it was. There was a lady in the audience at Black Hat a few weeks ago and I said, where are you from? And she said, Israel. And I was like, oh, okay. I don't have any comments on that subject just because it's like such a tense, you know, area of the world right now. And then I'm like, wait, am I getting into politics? No, I'm not getting into politics. I don't want to like talk about anything like that just because I'm this like white 48-year-old bald dude. Like, dude, who cares about your opinion, Danny? No one needs to hear it into a microphone, bro. Not sure why you're bringing it up now, dog. You know what I'm saying, dog? You know what I'm saying? All right. 14 minutes in. I think we're going to wrap it for this week. I was going to go through this article that I read about the... Well, I'll tell you the high level. They had a Florida Man Games. They had a mullet contest. They had a mud duel with pool noodles, an evading arrest obstacle course. And this podcaster, Pete Melfi, a radio personality, turned podcaster in St. Augustine. He organized the laziest race in the history of races, a 0.5K beer run. And they just did a bunch of like crazy shit to like, you know, play into the Florida man stereotype and just embrace it and have fun with it and have like snakes and gators and stuff like that. And, you know, it's cool. I think it's cool. I think Florida gets a bad rap, you know. Here, I'm going to read a couple articles of this. Paragraphs of this article. But Florida Man has been a cultural phenomenon for so long that some in Florida and beyond have spent quite a bit of time thinking about what it means, how to challenge it, and what it says about the state's identity. Maybe the games in St. Augustine could also be an excuse to explore the evolution of the meme and of Florida itself. This is a quote. Florida has always been, to me, such an important barometer of where the nation is headed, said Julio Capo Jr., a historian at Florida International University in Miami, who has written that viewing the state and its people, quote unquote, in caricature form, is a centuries-old habit. Yet there are a few attempts to take the state seriously, to understand its past, its present, and much less its future. And somebody else later in the article was like, dude, Florida's a giant state. Like, there's so many square miles of it. There's so many different types of people there. Like, you can't just be like, Florida is X or Florida is Y. Like, Florida is a lot of things all at once. Everything, everywhere, all at once. Okay, I'm getting a little defensive about Florida. That's probably a good sign that it's time to wrap up the old pod, John. Follow me on Instagram at Danny Palmer NYC. Tell your friends about this pod. Listen, rate, subscribe. You're supposed to say stuff like that. Call to action. I don't fucking know, dude. Come out to Black Hat this Friday night. Also, I'm opening for Giulio Gallerati in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, at the Comedy Loft, April 4th through the 6th. That's going to be super exciting. It's a Thursday through a Saturday in D.C. And then on Sunday, April 7th, we're going to be playing at the Punchline in Atlanta. That's a badass club. First place I ever performed stand-up comedy. And it's a memorable place, and it's going to be a great weekend. So come out if you're down in the ATL. Georgia, whatever we do, fow ya. All right, I'm going to end the pod now. Thank you for listening, you fucking Jones. Y'all are cool. I'll just keep doing this pod. Maybe not for wealth and fame. Maybe just for personal gratification and a show of appreciation for the listeners across the world that do continue to listen to this pod. So thank you, Germany. Thank you, Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you, Paterson, New Jersey. Y'all are fucking dope, dude. All right, peace. Bye. Thank you.